We're back. Just heard in the news about the Oxford appeals case. That is near and dear to my heart because I represent the Watson family who was a victim in that case. And we're going to have on as a special guest tonight, Ben Johnson, who also represents a victim in that case. It's one more step we have to get to is the Michigan Supreme Court. And also we have our cases going on in the federal court. But we also have a big bench tonight. We have a special guest coming on, Brandon Grisco, who is from Fossone & Grisco PLC. He's going to be talking about something that's really, really important. It's about the dumping that takes place in the state of Michigan, particularly in Wayne dumping site. It's a scary situation of a lot of the unknowns. He just had a victory in front of a great judge, Kevin Cox. We also have a special guest coming on, and pay attention to Martin Vanderfleet. He is renowned around our country, definitely within Michigan. Anything as it relates to eavesdropping, tapping, the like. He works for the FBI. He's a lawyer by training, but is one that is obviously a go-to person amongst all lawyers. And then none other than my man, Todd Perkins. Todd represented the Eastern Market case. We're going to talk about all those topics and more just after this. Well, I have a guest that's coming on, Brandon Grisco, who is with the Fossone Grisco law firm. He hates to talk about himself. He proves his acts in work and production, and he's grabbed on to going up against the Goliath, and for, I say, all the right causes. Brandon, you with me?
I'm with you. Good to be with you, brother counsel.
Yeah, the pleasure is all ours. And I first started tracking the Wayne County dump site when everyone will remember when a train was derailed in Ohio, and all the toxins of that train came out, and basically people were being told to stay in houses, not to get into the area, not to, you know, breathing with asthmat mask and the like. It was a scary situation. Little did I know that train was coming to dump the material here in Wayne County. And sure enough, you and your team have put together from the Manhattan Project something that obviously you had a TRO, a temporary restraining order, granted in your way. But tell us a little bit of what scares you about this case, what you're looking at, and what is the fight.
Well, I think you're absolutely right when you say we're going up against the Goliath. You know, you've got a national waste management type company, very well funded. And you can bet that they're going to put up quite the fight here. So nothing's for certain at this point. We do appreciate the judge's swift review of our motion for temporary restraining order that was granted, as you said. And we've got a hearing scheduled for next week. So we expect that Wayne Disposal, which is the defendant, is going to be aggressively fighting that temporary restraining order, most likely. But this case really came about, Todd, out of the public and the communities. Need for safety and need to be secure, including things like emergency response, fire service, and the public's right to be heard in public hearings and things like that. So that's really the genesis of the case, is the frustration of the public and the communities with not feeling like they're being heard before Eagle and things like that.
I can only imagine after doing the research about, we're not even, the public under federal law is not necessarily always allowed to know what toxins and what radioactive material is coming into this dump site and what gets put into the air and the like. But one of the things you talk about, and I think, you know, I read Warren Evans' statement and I totally agree, you know, safety is number one. A lot of the things that may concern people and that I'm sure you're concerned about is trucking or transportation of this material and how it gets to and from and what safeguards, what happens if there's a spill, what happens if we don't have the right people. You know, I mean, obviously those things had to go through your mind when you were going through this.
Absolutely. You know, the firefighters that we've talked to, and this is in our complaint, it's supported with evidence that we attach to it and everything. But the fire departments locally are ill-equipped to respond to some type of radiological release or event. You know, beyond calling a regional team or something like that, that then also likely is just going to call for somebody with a higher level of training even. There's just no response plan in place to deal with something like that. Especially when you don't know where it's coming from, what route it's going to travel, what security measures are in place, what exact type of material it is. There's so many unknowns that it's impossible to prepare any type of emergency response plan when there's that level of unknown in the system.
Sure, sure. I mean, when you think about this, everybody, I mean, the tons of listeners to this concept here, just imagine, if you will, how many truck accidents do we see in a day? Whatever the case may be, imagine in your mind's eye that you have a truck hauling radioactive material from the Manhattan Project. And my good friend Brandon here, as it's coming through, we don't know, one, how it's going to be captured and capsulized into the haul, into necessarily the dump. Two, if there's an extreme event, how do we know we have the right protections and guards put in place? I can only imagine, you know, the people that you represent, the community, the citizens, the fact that this is what your bailiwick of taking on and working for municipalities, that's got to be everybody's concern.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And it just goes back to, there's certain things we're just unaware of at this point, things that we don't know. Not to mention that, Once this material actually gets to the facility, what happens with it at that point? And if there's some type of incident, be it a fire or a medical incident or something else at the facility, now you've got first responders that have to go in and try and assess and deal with that situation. And how are they going to do that safely?
Yeah, no, exactly. Well, listen, my friend, your reputation speaks for itself in advance for representing communities and the like and what you do. Godspeed to you, and, you know, make the people proud.
Todd, thanks for having me on.
All right, my pleasure. We'll be right back with Behind the Bench and a special guest that I'm excited to talk to. I could spend a couple hours with him about the techniques for which he uses. You know, I did not know this. I did not realize that there is a dog that they have as can detect eavesdropping. It's going to be amazing to speak with them. But we'll be right back just after this. So my next guest, I'm excited. I actually worked with Marty. He runs North Point Security. I had a major corporation that may have had some trade secrets and the like being spied upon, and I called my FBI team that works for us, and retired FBI agents and retired Secret Service agents, and they said there's only one guy, and that was Marty. Marty came in from the west side of the state, spent a whole day sweeping this major company to and the peace of mind that he gave to the board and to the ownership was second to none. And I have been involved just most recently in so many cases where there's eavesdropping, tracking, all sorts of things that is amazing to me in the advancement of what companies have to go through and what they have to think about, what individuals have to go through and what they have to think about. Without any other ado, I'm going to let Martin talk about himself, Martin Van Fleet. So pleasure to have you on, my friend. Are you there?
I am. Thanks for having me on, Todd. I appreciate that introduction.
The pleasure's mine. And I must tell you, any great agency that we go with always recommends your name when it comes to these the ESI, the surveillance and the like. So, and you work around the country, don't you? I mean, currently you're out in New York.
I am, yeah. I do quite a bit of work for different companies all over the place, and keeps me very busy. This is seems to be a growing problem with eavesdropping, and I don't think it's going away anytime soon.
I can only imagine. So when a little bit of your background,
Sure.
and Andy Bartnowak, our good friend and former agent who talks about you highly as well. You worked together with him in the FBI. Tell us, how long were you with the feds?
I was with the FBI for 26 years. I worked a lot of criminal cases, bank robberies, violent crime, and then Andy and I were on the drug squad together, actually. And then after that, I became what was called a technically trained agent. I was one of the guys who was responsible for installing electronic surveillance, whether that be wiretaps, cameras, GPS trackers, different things like that. And eventually, I was given special training in finding those devices, and that's known as technical surveillance countermeasures, more commonly known as bug sweeps. And I was sent to FBI facilities in the U.S. as well as embassies, where we have legal attaché offices to make sure that there were no eavesdropping devices in those facilities.
Wow. And on top of all of that, you got your JD.
Yeah, I did. Actually, I had it before I came in. I never practiced, though, unlike you. I got that, and then after I retired in 2016, I got my private investigator license so that I could do this work. I started Northport Security then, and primarily I do corporate offices, boardrooms, hotel meeting rooms where companies are doing meetings off-site, as well as residences for executives, jets, vehicles, different things like that. And then I also get calls for sweeps of residences for individuals who are involved in legal disputes, whether it's divorce or some other type of matter, just to make sure that somebody hasn't put a tracker on their car or put some type of bug in their house. And then more recently, probably, unfortunately, I get more calls for hidden cameras in places like schools and gyms and businesses where somebody has put one of these cameras in a bathroom, and that's becoming probably a bigger problem than anything right now.
That's a different dimension for which I don't understand. But that being said, the advancement you've seen in the decades that you've been doing this, I gotta believe it's light speed at because of all the technology and the like. And
Sure.
certification has to be, difficult in and of itself at times. How fast is it moving? And,
Well,
anecdotally, what do you see?
I think it's very, very fast. When I started out putting devices in, we had pinhole cameras, which were, half a foot long, and you had a giant VCR that you recorded to, and you had a power supply. You had to run lines for it, cables and things. And now I can go to Amazon or eBay and I could buy a camera that looks like a cell phone charger or a smoke detector for less than $50. And I can basically just plug it in and it's good to go. And there's no wiring involved. And I can use my cell phone to live monitor what's going on in that space if I'm within a certain distance or if I know the Wi-Fi password for the residence or the office space. So, those things have just changed. They've got more miniature, they've got cheaper, and they've got easier to use between cameras as well as trackers. When you think about, in the early days, trackers were big devices that would just kind of send out a ping and you'd use the equivalent of a radar scope to find them. And now you've got AirTags that are about the size of a quarter that are $29 that anybody can slip into, any space they want and use to track somebody pretty easily and with a great deal of accuracy.
Now, scary stuff in a lot of ways, I would imagine. And being able to detect that, I guess, would require special equipment.
Yeah, it does. A lot of the focus of the tools I use is finding wireless signals, and I've got some special equipment. It's quite expensive. Same stuff that the government uses. And basically, you're just looking for signals that shouldn't be in that space, whether it's in a home or an office, and tracking those signals down and establishing that either they're outside of the space or inside. And if they're inside, tracking them down to a particular object and determining whether it's a legitimate item, like the AV system, for instance, or it's somebody who's put a camera in there that's transmitting out. And so We have special tools that look for those radio signals, whether they're, Wi-Fi signals or Bluetooth, any type of signal. So, and there's other tools too, but that's probably the bigger focus, just because it's easier to use a device that doesn't have to be wired up. I can monitor it from a distance, and I can install it quickly, and there's not a whole lot of risk of being caught.
So, corporations today in our world for which we live, Ford, GM, you name it, when they have these protected patents and or board meetings and the like, you're one of the guys, the go-to people that has to go in and work on a site. How long does it normally take if you have to, cover everything?
Sure. So typically, one of my jobs would be 8 to 10 offices in a boardroom, which would take me a full day to do.
Wow. And it is there been, well, I don't want to get into a particular name or anything of that sort, but have you seen advanced technology in places that have surprised you?
Yeah, and I think what's interesting is it's not necessarily a spy, a Russian or Chinese agent who's breaking into a place. It's typically an insider. It's somebody who's about to be terminated, their employment's about to be terminated, or they just have a grudge against somebody and they'll put something in. And that's probably what I see more than anything is somebody who already has access to the space. So you can have great cameras and access control systems, but if somebody already has access to the space, it's pretty difficult to defend against that.
Right. You know what I want to do someday? I want to read your book that you're going to write, because there's got to be a great book and some great stories about all the stuff you have done and seen. And when I watched you operate for our company that we retained you for, I was kind of blown away by how detailed and how advanced and how crazy this world can be. So I'm going to have you on again, and I know I much appreciate you, and so does every lawyer in the country that hires you. So thank you
Well,
so much,
thank you,
Michael.
Chad. I
All right.
appreciate it.
Be well, my friend.
You too. Bye.
So we're going to come back, and we're going to bring in none other than my partner, Todd Perkins, in life, and we're going to talk a little bit about a few things. We're going to talk about P. Diddy, and we're also going to talk about the Eastern Market shooting, which Todd Perkins was the man, as he always is. We'll be right back just after this. We're back, and I got to tell you, my brother from another mother, Todd Perkins, he is the best at what he does. It gets done what he has to get done continuously. I see him early in the morning, late at night. We park at the same spot. Brother Todd, you with me, my man?
So if you, yes, I am. And so if you see me, then that means you're doing the same thing that I'm doing. You know,
Yeah, but I.
we're just chasing our tails, right?
Yeah, but I'm a little slower than you. You think faster than me, man. So it takes me longer,
No.
and I speak slower most of the time. So it takes me a little longer to get the stuff out.
No, it just gives a profound way of speaking. That's all that is. That's all.
My
Yeah, great.
man.
Hey, but you've been doing some great work. I see in the paper, man. That we won't really talk about it now, but I just got to commend you. When I see you in the parking lot, I got to talk to you about it.
Thank you, my man. Thank you.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, I was called earlier by Steve Courtney on WJR, and then Lomas Brown and the show, they talked about it, and I said, hey, listen, guys, I got the guy coming on tonight. Everyone's talking about, and I believe 1,000% people don't understand the law, but you were the guy and your team on the Eastern Market shooting case. Let's talk about it for a minute. It's self-defense, no crime. Everyone
Correct.
wants to know, and it's an easy answer, but it's a sad one. Everybody wants to know, how does that work as it relates to the innocent bystander?
Well, we all know about this thing called transferred intent, where if I had a bad intention to hurt someone and I made a mistake and hurt the next person, then that would be wrong, and I could be charged for that. Whereas if I had a justifiable purpose, which in this situation was self-defense and defense of others, and I took action, and that action accidentally struck this other person like it did tragically in this situation, the initial action was justified. So then it couldn't, that initial action couldn't be bastardized by the fact that it had some unintended consequences. Because clearly, this is our client had no intention on hurting anyone. He only had intentions on saving someone. And the irony of this entire tragic set of circumstances is the person who you're talking about, the innocent victim, he was one who was trying to break up the fight himself.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, and there's so many flowing and positive things about this individual whom I never met. But, you know, he brought joy to so many lives. Mm-hmm. And, you know, our client is really miserable with himself about this. I mean, he is.
That's a tragedy for what. Yeah. Talk about that for a second. I mean, you know, people that are down on the bottom, a lot of people don't care about. People that are on the mountain are trying to be, you know, take you down constantly. You and I know that every day of the week, twice
absolutely.
On Sunday. Tell me about your client. How is he? How's his helmet? How's he standing up in dealing with this?
Well, so I have to give kudos to my partner, Adam Clemens. He has taken lead on this, and he's directly communicated with the client. I've helped him as far as, you know, the research that we did and some of the communications we had with law enforcement and the prosecutor's office. But the client is, you know, as a lawyer, lost for words. When does that happen?
Yeah, and with you, never. But this is a tragic thing that
you
can't necessarily sum up.
Yeah, and it speaks to the situation and the gravity of the situation in which he feels horrible. I mean, I can't say it any other way. I think that's the best way to say it is keep it simple. He knows that his actions were justified. He knows that he did the right thing based upon what that other bad actor was doing.
Right.
But, you know, to have and to be ensnared in this sort of triangle with a situation in which he knows about this individual now, he's heard about this individual now, and, you know, wishes – sends condolences to the family who may not want that right now. You know how raw those feelings are.
Rawness is a tough thing to get through.
Yeah, and, you know, but to say that he is not in a good place would be an understatement. I mean, he is thankful that law enforcement, that Kim Worthy, that they made the right decision, and we stand by the right decision. And it is this is a classic situation in which deadly force was necessary to stop what was potentially a deadly set of consequences. But the unintended consequence is a greater, you know, sort of social issue that we need to talk about.
You know, I praised Kim Worthy both via text and I praised her on interviews. It takes a lot of fortitude to do what she did because so many people want to just rubber stamp it, put it in front of a district court judge and see if they can get it bound over and yada, yada, yada. But the law is the law, and she stood up on facts, and she asked if she could come on the next time to speak about it, but she had an event tonight. She couldn't. But the facts in this case and the law in this case sit on all fours, but it's that conundrum that citizens Joe Sixpack don't necessarily always understand in light of another person, but you know, that transferred intent. He wasn't intending to do anything other than a law of self-defense and self-defense of others, and that is the purity of it. And this, but sadness comes through. Yeah,
and to more to Kim Worthy in this respect, and to the police department, they did something that is not necessarily what the general public would want, but you know, this is our opportunity, yours. You have a voice tied out here with your listeners who I know you have a large listening audience, because every time I get off, people are texting me about what I should do, what I shouldn't do, and, you know, let Todd take the reins because, you know,
right.
Smarter than you.
No.
But no, I believe that, you know, Kim Worthy is the leader that we need.
Amen.
She does the things that we don't all, you know, that we don't necessarily agree with, but in her heart of hearts, she feels and does the right thing. And anyone out here who is upset with her because of the decision, you know, this is like 2 + 2 = 4.
Right, right.
That's
right.
Just that simple. I mean, and for them, and understand the toil and the arguments that took place between law enforcement and the prosecutor's office. They waxed and waned over this for the 3 days. And because they wanted to be right, they researched every aspect of what they could do, what they couldn't do, and they didn't do the weak thing. And what I mean by the weak thing is what you just brought up, is to charge the man and let a judge dismiss the case.
Amen.
That's the weakness that we don't need. We have a leader in Wayne County, and they did the right thing. And I say that legally, but my heart still is heavy for this family who lost a brother, a cousin, a son, a father.
Yeah.
You know, he was all those things to so many different people.
Yeah, to everybody. And you know what? Our hearts go out to that young man's family. And, you know, the crown is heavy and there's people that will try to throw down. But you're 1,000% right. Todd is always man. Kim stood up and had the courage to make a call where a lot of people in this world would not. So my hat's off to that. I got one minute. I want a quick answer on, does P. Diddy.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, that's crazy talk. That's crazy.
Oh,
but can that guy ever.
Knew it was coming.
Yeah, he knew it was coming. Right. There's no, he could never, I don't know. You know, how does that man ever come back?
Well, I mean, I don't think he comes back professionally. Now it's about what can you salvage of the rest of my life.
That's
as
right.
A 54-year-old or 55-year-old man, what can I salvage from my life? You could, even if you're victorious in this case, socially, professionally, that which you were doing is no longer there. There's no space for that in there. Unfortunately, in this situation, just because you could win a legal case doesn't mean that you win from a social perspective. Doesn't mean that you win the court of public opinion. And that's, you know, that I refrain from making judgment, but, you know, at the same time, you know, the soil is there, you know, the dirt has been poured.
Yep. You're right, my man. You're right. It's all about right now talking about liberty and what he can save of it. So,
yeah, but I think he should have gotten a bond. I do.
Where's he going to go? Where's he going to go? I mean, come on. You got a magnifying glass on the guy.
Absolutely.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah,
I had the same argument with some other big people that, you know, they wanted to put
into. But here's what I think is garbage, though, and I'm going to say that word garbage. His lawyer negotiated his return. He came back to the city, stayed in a hotel, and was going to surrender the next morning, and they sent the U.S. Marshals to his hotel and arrested him that night. I think that's trash.
Yeah, that's just showmanship and not following through with a handshake. You and I, you put your hand out, it's your bond. I put my hand out, it's my bond. Yeah, we didn't find
that
here.
He was going to be in court.
That's right. Yep. That's right. God bless you, my friend. You too. Take care. Talk to you soon, my man. We'll be right back with Behind the Bench, and we have none other than Ven Johnson. We're back. Before I get into my next guest, I promised Marty I would definitely point out North Point Security, just because it's renowned within our country and renowned within our state. And if any corporation out there, individual needs him. He is the man. His team is amazing. But I need to get into my dear friend and someone that I admire and follow and wish I was more like in so many different ways. Ven Johnson. Ven, you with me, my man?
I am, brother. How you doing, Todd?
I'm good. I know, and I got to tell you, I thank you, and I know you're doing me a solid here because you are. I know what 1 month, what 2 weeks, what 1 week, what 3 days mean prior to a trial, and you're going into a trial, and usually you're in a cocoon going at it hard within these next 3 days. What are you doing in Florida with trial?
I'm in Jacksonville, Florida, Todd. We have an electrocution case of a. Our client was up in a boom lift that he rented from Home Depot. Have you ever heard of that company, Ted?
Yes. Yes, you and I.
So, yes, sir, you and I together, my brother. And we're down here battling with them again. And that'll start here on Monday in Jacksonville. So that's what I'm doing. But obviously a real tough day, a really emotional day for not just the Oxford parents, Todd, but for Michigan citizens who lose again because government has set government up to protect government and screw the not just the little guy, all of us, Todd, all of us.
Amen. And, you know, there's no better person. And Ven is speaking of Oxford. They national news prior to us coming on had the announcement. It's out there. It's being illuminated. How we, you know, how the family's lost. And, you know, this Oxford case needs to have an ear of rational thinking. And I'm praying with your voice and your team and our team and working with others to get this to the Michigan Supreme Court. And that's the
Yes, sir. That's exactly where we're going. But as you know, here comes the lawyer, blah, blah, blah. So only behind the bench. And Todd Plood could take this issue on, but we don't have an automatic right of appeal to the Michigan Supreme Court. We have a leave application. Would you please hear this case? So there is no bigger case in this country in civil litigation right now than the Oxford case. Its ramifications are, in my opinion, worldwide, Todd. And so we're going to ask the Supreme Court to take a look at this case. I'm not going to tell you which one of my clients you'd be able to guess because you know them. Listen to this. Quote, it's amazing how you have to rely on the system to beat the system. I just don't get it. You have to rely on the system to beat the system. The system being, ladies and gentlemen, of the government setting up these special rules to sue the government. And Todd, this, by the way, this whole system that we're, the Governmental Tort Liability Act, GTLA, what is incredible, a lot of people didn't know that it actually was set up to circumvent, go around a Michigan Supreme Court opinion.
Right.
That was authored by Justice Black at the time back in the 1960s when they said, hey, governments aren't today what they used to be. Everybody has insurance. Everybody has to be held accountable. We are no longer going to follow this. King says you can't sue the king. So they said, no, there is no governmental immunity. And then the folks that were in Lansing got together and, of course, wanted to get around that. And their argument, of course, you know this, is, oh, my God, if you sue me for hold me accountable, it might cost money. But, yeah, it does in every profession.
Right.
And
there's
the fact
a
of the matter is,
you know,
but and it's not just in this particular case, in this particular, I'm not suing them for a bad decision that they made. I'm suing them because they took an action and did no actions on things that they knew.
That's the biggest key to me. Don't you agree? Is it a failure?
And then they give
act?
Them the They're, backpack, Todd. Right. They gave them the backpack.
Right. The failure to act. Just, they get around the lawsuit when you and I and every other citizen can't get around is that failure to act when they know. Oh, okay. I'm not going to get sued. I got a blanket around me, but I'm going to fail to
exactly.
act. And that to me, and, you, me, everybody in the room, we're held accountable. Well, you can't use that as both a sword and a shield.
But Todd, if this were a private school, we wouldn't be having this conversation, as you well know. And I think that's what makes this case so compelling to people is, you know, you and I have been doing this area of law. We've known that this is the law for forever, since I've been
Robinson,
a lawyer for 38 years, right?
Yeah.
Horrible decision that needs to be overturned. The fact of the matter is most people, Jane and John Q. Public out there, they don't know this until it comes up in their lives, which you never want, right? Because it's usually someone is severely injured and or killed. So
right.
the fact of the matter is I think people have to see this in some graphic way, and the Oxford case could not be more important. And again, not just in Michigan, but I think it is a chance for the Michigan Supreme Court and the people of the state of Michigan, the legislature, for cripe's sakes, let's get off our ass, our butts, excuse me, Todd, our butts, and do something and lead the country and show them that government is not above the law. Government is still accountable to the people. And that, my friends, talk about reach across the aisle. That applies to Democrats, Republicans, independents, or nothings. we all, I think, can agree on that. Can't
Amen.
We, Todd?
Amen. I mean, it can't be more succinct. No one should be have this prophylactic iron bubble around them when there is obvious, clear, I'm not talking like a mistake or an error. I'm talking about, and you're illuminating, and as you did in the Court of Appeals, these were overt actions and failures to act. And when you have the Correct. Failure to act as being, you know, I think I'm going to have a cigarette now and take a coffee break as opposed to go save somebody when I know I have a duty, I have a job, but I'm going to fail to do it. And you can't be held accountable on that? That's crazy to me. And here in this particular situation, when they know, how many times did the teacher or the counselor tell the dean of what was going on in this kid's life? And he still,
Todd,
five times at minimum, you know?
Todd, they claimed he was suicidal. So what did they do when the parents didn't take him to the emergency room like they should have? They didn't require the emergency room. They didn't call for an ambulance. They didn't call Child Protective Services. They sent him back to class and then handed him the backpack.
And on top of all of that, they're supposed to be trained, which they said they were. If you're trained in that field, are you giving that kid the backpack back? Are you putting him in general population at the time? No, I'm going to have him in the counselor room.
Todd, if this were my house, once I saw that math paper that he had, and what a lot of folks don't know, that math paper and the picture of a gun and a person pointing the gun, he drew an almost identical picture the first day of school that same school year and gave it to his teacher. Okay. On top of that, they had a screening test that they never gave us until the day before our motion hearing in Oakland County.
Can you imagine? Where I was there. Yeah, right.
You were there. Yeah. His score was like 31, and the score had to be under 20. He was high risk. Todd, they didn't do anything.
This is why I love you, my man, because you have grit, you have passion, you're brilliant, and you fight the fight. And that is how I was brought up, and I love to watch you go at it. Good luck down in Jacksonville, Florida. Win, win, win
Thank
for
you,
us, my man. I'll talk to you soon.
Appreciate you, Todd.
Appreciate you. So we had a lot on the show tonight, and I got to tell you, we're getting more and more listeners and more calls to put on certain guests. And I can tell you, Kim Worthy wants to come back on. We have other great people that want to come back on, and we're going to do it with Behind the Bench. And you'll hear us next month at the same time, same hour.